Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am so excited to be in the studio today with my good friends, John Dougal on the right.
Hey, great to be with you.
And Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Hello, and hi, listeners. So glad you're with us.
To have a great conversation. And, Kamala Harris. My goodness, John. By the way, for our listeners, you know, everyone has this kind of struggle about how you say her first name, and the trick is to think of a comma and then la.
Yeah.
So Kamala.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard that.
Not Kamalot.
Yeah,
no.
Kamala.
I saw some magazine with
comma,
that on the cover.
Kamala.
Yes.
But John, I want to start with you just because being on the right, what momentum this woman has created in the last 2 weeks. It's pretty stunning. I mean, the numbers show it in the polling, the numbers show it in the fundraising. And honestly, the clips show it when you have her standing up with so much enthusiasm and how articulate she is. You know, you might disagree with her policies, but the woman is proving to be a pretty strong candidate right now.
Well, I think it shows two things. One, it shows the desperation the Democrats were in. They were so in despair with Biden's performance at the debate, and they couldn't hide that.
The contrast between him and her.
Yes, and so this now gives them two things. One, gets rid of that boat anchor around their candidacy. And gives them excitement about the future. And so I think it's the culmination. Those two factors have just let out this energy from my perspective for the Democratic Party saying, okay, now we have somebody we can really back wholeheartedly.
Yeah, so what you described there is like pent-up energy. Some people, Shireen, talk about as a honeymoon.
Yeah.
And that's still in play. You know, is this a short-term thing or is she going to be able to sustain it? But even
she only needs to sustain it for 100 days or less.
Yeah, but maybe that plays in her favor, right? But
yes.
But J.D. Vance in a public, I don't know if it's a public, but it became public, called it a sucker punch.
Called it a sucker punch. That's right. So I have to pause for just a second to acknowledge, I think we would all agree that regardless of if you fully agreed with his politics or not, President Biden has served this country with immense dedication over many years and has worked really hard on things like reducing the cost of insulin for seniors, the infrastructure bill that actually finally passed with funding, improving our roads, the CHIPS Act, bringing manufacturing back to this country, really believing in an economics that builds from the bottom up and the middle out, right? Mm-hmm. And whether or not, you know, I'm sure you can all debate, what is so rare, John, and I think you would agree with this, is somebody giving up power. And I think that this is, and I do believe that stepping aside was an act of patriotism, and I'm grateful that he did it for many reasons, but I'm certain that was a difficult decision.
Yeah. Fair enough. And I would just say that leaving power behind, he had the nomination for his party to be president of the United States, and he walked away from it. John, there's not a lot of examples of that in history, right? George Washington, people will talk about.
Well, you got LBJ. The last time that a Democratic president was one term and didn't choose to run for re-election was LBJ, and there was an RFK in the race.
Yeah. John, have you ever seen it at the state level in all your experience on Capitol Hill? Have you seen someone walk away from power? I mean, Lane Beatty resigned as Senate president, if I'm remembering this right, to be the state Olympic coordinator. But, he was doing a favor, an act of service for Governor Leavitt, who asked him to do that. Have you seen other examples in state service?
Yeah, I mean, there's various examples. There's lots of state representatives that choose not to run again. There's, various, governors that choose not to run again. I chose not to run again as auditor.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
So you've got, lots of different examples. Maybe you have it much more at the state level because usually it is a major sacrifice, either because as a legislator, it's part-time.
Look at Senator Romney.
Balancing.
Not running for re-election.
Yeah, interesting. That's a great example. So back to Kamala Harris.
Back to Kamala.
Here we go. So I think this is certainly a pivotal moment.
So I want to go back, though.
Okay.
You're talking about he stepped down and it was a form of patriotism.
I think it is.
I can see your perspective. But there was also this groundswell to basically toss him out. And there was allegations of folks were going to invoke the 25th Amendment to try and boot him out and other things like that. So I think there were lots of factors that went into play.
There are lots of factors.
That he said it
was untenable.
Ultimately,
it was a decision he made. I mean, it was, right? Like, whether or not there were outside forces, he could have gutted it out. And I'm glad he didn't. So I will say that there are so many things that I am excited about in this moment. I mean, certainly many of us are children of immigrants, but to think about the closeness of that experience in Kamala Harris's life, to think about somebody who has been a prosecutor, who has worked on returning, like really, I think, advancing litigation against some of the things that many of us agree with, right? Like, for example, going after people who were sexual offenders, going after people who were defrauding people on home loan, like all of these kinds of big issues that I think affect everyday Americans. She has been at the forefront of some of that work. I also think that she brings, like, you want to talk about, yeah, Joe Biden being old. Let's talk about Donald Trump. Like, I do think that I was really disturbed when I watched that debate to think that those were the two individuals, their age, their perspectives that were going to carry us forward. I wasn't inspired by either of those candidates. Obviously, I'm probably never going to be inspired by Donald
RFK
Trump.
And RFK Jr. isn't a spring chicken either.
No. And I do think that there is something exciting about having a younger person in this role. And the fact that this is a younger woman of color is incredible. Daughter of an immigrant.
So you mentioned J.D. Vance said this was a sucker punch.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that plays well in their narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to think there was a 50-50 chance Biden was going to be ousted or he was not going to run again, whatever term you want to use.
I mean, it was feeling and that it was way. Gonna, it was trending
yeah,
that
I mean,
way for
I mean,
sure.
I mean, there was a good chance it wasn't going to happen, but there was still, I think, a 50-50 chance that something was going to change.
Except for,
and
I
so
just,
for them to say it was a sucker punch, I don't buy.
I don't buy it either. And I have to say, it's such an interesting choice. J.D. Vance is not expanding the electorate. I think we talked about that briefly. Ohio's pretty much locked
mini-me.
Up. Yeah, yeah.
Donald Trump,
it's
mini-me.
Same
yeah.
thing. Actually, potentially more mm-hmm. to the right, certainly holds many concepts I think we'll talk about in a minute that are, I think, deeply troubling, kind of strange, kind of weird.
Calling childless people childless sociopaths.
Sociopath. That is unacceptable, right? You may know this
number.
Oh, come
on. You got to be a dog person to run for president.
But like nationally, I have recently heard that nationally, the nuclear family in the United States, that's 20% of families in this country. It's a little less, I think, actually, 18%.
It would surprise people in Utah, the percent of our households that are married couple families. It's a lot smaller than people think.
It's smaller than people think. And I also am really, I just want to take a moment also to acknowledge, I'm really disturbed by the commentary about Kamala Harris not being a mother. A stepmother is a critically important role. The person she co-parents with, her, I guess, husband's ex-wife has said that she's a phenomenal co-parent. I also just think that people, for many different reasons, do not have children and cannot have children. It doesn't mean that they are not fit to run this country.
Yeah. Okay, Shireen, so just so that our audience doesn't think that I'm feeling left of center and in the Kamala camp.
Bring 100%. Us back.
Well, just so I always encourage people, and I'll say it to our listeners, read the New York Times, read the Wall Street Journal, compare and contrast them, see what you learn. So the Wall Street Journal's been really clear to speak to Kamala's record, you know, the vice president's record, whether it's excessive spending, whether it's support for the Green New Deal, whether it's to be against to support a ban on fracking, student loan forgiveness, entitlement expansion, capping of rents. Anyway, I just throw those out there to say that there's a public policy history that's troubling to a lot of conservatives. And what I'm happy about is that on a couple of those, she's already moderated.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I do not support a ban on fracking. And she's also made clear that I was representing California in some of those roles. And in this role, I'd be representing the entire country. So she's my move to the middle. So, John, react to that. I mean, I know you.
Yeah. So here's the question: Is she moderating, or is she just saying that to get elected?
She's
and then we'll revert because Joe Biden talked about he was going to be much more moderate.
Yeah.
Than from my perspective, he was as president.
So my thinking is she's saying it to get elected, but that's part of moderating.
Well,
I always tell people
words talk's cheap. It's action that I care about.
In politics, everyone twists themselves. You don't, John. You're a principled guy. I will hold you out as a principled guy, but. The vast majority of people in politics react to the public will and public perception. And I don't think that's a problem. That's what they're doing. They're representing public sentiment. And so that will twist you into a pretzel. But I think communications is policy. And part of what when she moderates on things like that, I think she's showing an openness to policy changes.
Yeah. So here's the nuance from my perspective. If she's shifting her position in words and it does shift in action, then I believe it. Mm-hmm. Too often what I see is people shift in words, but their beliefs don't change. So once they get in office, they revert back to what they actually believe. And that's why I'm just saying, talk's cheap. it will come down to the actions. Does she really believe it? Is she really then representing the whole nation?
Both of you might remember, but after President George W. Bush had his recent visit to Salt Lake, and I had some time and took notes of the things he said, but he said that the office is more important than the occupant of the office. That was interesting. But he also said that vote for character rather than policy. It's interesting.
I think that's something I've heard you say a few times.
But part of what he said in this instance is he said, because you don't know what they're going to come up against in their 4 years. And what you want to know is, do they have the character when they're behind the scenes in a room that you're not in to make judgments that are mature and wise and prudent for this country? And he's the best example because 9/11 happened and his domestic policy went away and he was totally focused on international. So just interesting food for thought.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Do you guys want to move to something else or do you want to do a little bit more J.D. Vance, given that he's taken on people that like cats?
I think J.D. Vance will give us plenty of fodder in the coming weeks. I would actually love to really quickly talk about the calls from Biden to reform the Supreme Court. So there was a proposal that came out that basically is saying that we should have term limits on the Supreme Court. There should be an ethics code. And that basically barring presidential immunity. So there was a recent ruling that kind of gave presidents a disturbing amount of power. So these reforms, actually, most Americans agree with. I think there's
quite a bit of polling. This is what's interesting. Yeah, because you think that it's dead on arrival, but it's still important that it be said.
I think so, too.
Because it will help the movement that the vice president's a part of now.
Yes. And I do think,
John, you need to react to these because you have a lot of legal background.
From my perspective, one, I look at it as Biden has been opposed to so many of these things over the last several years during his administration. He had a commission, basically poo-pooed things coming out of there. And so now it is in his last, if you will, dying breaths in office, he's now proposing this. So I'm, highly skeptical of that.
Do you like the reforms, though?
Do you think there should be an ethics code for the Supreme Court?
Well, here's the thing. Right now, this is some of the folks that are expressing concerns, they've been in office, if you will. They've been justices for decades. So this is not about ethics. This is about who gets to dictate what goes on in the Supreme Court. So it's really about politics. It is not about ethics.
Okay,
from a legal perspective, what will end up happening is we will be jumping through all sorts of hoops trying to disqualify this and that and the other person. And so if we step back and look, this is really not about reforming the Supreme Court. This is really about the Democrats are upset about where the Supreme Court is today, and they want to pack it and control it for their agenda.
I just have to ask, if you found out that a left-wing donor was providing the kind of financial benefit, largesse, let's say, taking them on expensive trips to your left of center justices, would you feel
or congressmen and women?
Okay, but let's just stick with the actual case at hand, right? So would you feel comfortable? The kind of reporting that we're seeing on what Clarence Thomas is doing, what Samuel Alito is doing, is unprecedented in the history of the Supreme Court in this country. We did not know the level of engagement that these justices have with high power donors that have cases in front of the court. That is new. So you say it's politics, but I say it's reporting. Understanding the impact of that individual, Harlan Crow, on Justice Thomas is reprehensible.
There have been reports and allegations about this for years. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, there's also allegations about her and trips she's taken and so forth.
It's inappropriate. Do you agree that's inappropriate? I mean, just like
Which part is inappropriate?
I can bring this back.
Did it actually change the outcome of how he ruled? Nobody has been able to say that it changed him at all.
I can break this by saying we have to go to a break, but also to say that both can be true. The Democrats can be upset about the current composition, and we need ethics reform in the court. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and we are having a lively discussion because there is so much news going on. And before we go to local issues, including former President Donald Trump coming to Utah very shortly, Secret Service, my goodness, John,
it's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing. And everything
you have one responsibility, and it your excuses are just utterly fail. When you look
and say, how did they not have a central communication system for everybody that's got eyes on the moment?
You can't stand on a roof that's got a very slight slope. You can't do this.
Yeah, to this day.
You can't think about what's within range for a rifle. All sorts of, and supposedly 30 minutes, they've seen this guy. He's concerning. He's
range finder.
And drone and other
things like that.
And
with 2 minutes notice, people are saying he has a gun. An officer goes up and sees the gun.
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't spend a ton of time on it. We'll all agree on it. But this is an example where leadership has to come to bear and they need to, you know, change and have proper funding for what they need to do. And I am so glad to this day that the former president was not assassinated. That would have been horrible for our country.
Yeah.
That would have been very, very bad.
Okay.
And I wonder, you know, I don't know if it's funding or if it's structure. I mean, I'm not a fan of Homeland Security and it's buried under Homeland Security. I think Homeland Security is a problem since we created it coming out of 9/11.
Well, on that we agree.
Okay. So, Shireen, our governor, Spencer Cox, endorsed our Republican presidential nominee last week.
I believe
it was an abrupt U-turn.
Yeah, 2 weeks before that, he said he would be, what, writing in someone?
Uh-huh. And he did it through a letter to the former president that he disclosed at his monthly news conference. The letter had a lot of religious overtones in it. Basically said that his change of heart came to be because after the assassination attempt, he saw an opportunity for unity. Quick comments from both of you. Let's not spend a ton of time on it, but
I'll just say that this ill-advised. I'm curious how the religiousness of it hit you both.
Mm. Well, the one that's been the hardest for me, it was actually at the Republican convention when everyone was talking about how God saved the former president.
Mm.
And just the...
Oh,
the,
it's worse than that. It's...
A miracle.
His skin was pierced, blood was shed.
Oh, interesting.
To save us.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, it was hardcore Christian.
Yeah. So for me, this notion that, you know, that the father that was killed, the firefighter was killed protecting his family in the same moment, the same shooting, and that God did one and not the other.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's pretty mixed up.
Well, you know, did God rescue him or not? I can't say. God has not manifest that to me. It was a tragic event regardless. Yeah. And I get the governor's desire for unity. And there are ways to work towards unity without an endorsement. And if you have serious concerns about him, a single tweet and a press release from his wife do not unity make.
No.
And that's where I would have said, okay, work towards unity, try and build bridges, yet an endorsement to me is beyond the pale given the concerns that you've expressed in the past.
Having worked in political offices, it's a pretty lonely path to be a chief executive of a Republican state and not endorse the Republican candidate. I completely get that.
Well, I understand.
Yeah, I completely get that. So I understand that. If I were advising or in the office and he did this, I would have written a much shorter letter.
He also didn't have to go on national news and say he wasn't voting for Trump.
Yeah.
You can go on national news and say your vote is your vote.
Yeah.
People need to vote their conscience, and I will be voting mine, and you can leave it at that. But I think this is, unfortunately, a real pattern of behavior that we see from our governor, where when things seem maybe more politically convenient, it seems like that's the path he chooses, and I'm disappointed in that.
Yeah. John.
But to be fair, I mean, the shooting, the attempted assassination, was a significant disruptor in between when he made the earlier statement and that point. I just think...
Yeah.
Working towards unity, great. Having second thoughts because of this event, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Because this is an unexpected, tragic event. But there needs to be more on the other side to show that they actually want unity as well.
Sure. Yeah. And Trump's
behavior
is back.
I have not seen that.
Yes.
All right. So August 29th, St. Regis Resort in Deer Valley, former President Donald Trump will be doing a fundraising event here in Utah.
What's the cost?
Whoever branded this as...
A Chick-fil-A finance.
Yeah, costing the same as a franchise. Chick-fil-A, pretty clever. John, are you going to be there? You got deep pockets for that?
I'll probably be at Chick-fil-A.
That is a good billboard for this show.
Yeah,
it's a little more frugal.
To be clear, tickets are up to, I think, to be a host of this is $150,000. 10,000 to 20,000 is pretty normal. Mm-hmm. So I think people should really consider if this, you know, if you find out that your legislator, your representative was at this, really consider, you know, that kind of investment.
I landed at the, I'll just call it State Aeronautics, but I landed the morning that Vice President Kamala Harris came to visit last, what was it, a month ago, four weeks ago, something. Yeah. And I saw how it was shutting down the airport and all the roads leading to the airport. And I was just glad I landed in time to get out of there. But that's the biggest impact this will have on me is
traffic. All
the black Suburbans. Yeah, and the traffic. Shereen, we have a recount going on.
Representative
Celeste Malloy won her GOP primary by 214 votes. I get why.
That is close.
That's close. I get why Colby Jenkins is requesting a recount. I totally get it.
Yeah, I do too. And I believe this is within there's a margin of error, which is below 0.25%. If you are in that window, you can, you know, call for a recount. I think it's reasonable to do that. I also just want to flag that there has been reporting that there were a number of ballots that were not counted because folks live in southern Utah in locations where ballots often have to go into Arizona, maybe Nevada, before they're coming back into Utah to be counted. This is a problem. I just really want to encourage people. The thing that you can do, of course, is vote in person, vote even earlier, vote very early. But this is a problem I understand how this whole situation feels raw. I also understand that you need one more than half to win.
Yeah.
In rural Utah, I was talking with somebody and they're like, well, the drop box isn't that far away. And I'm like, but you're on the Wasatch Front. It's 5 or 10 minutes away. It's pretty close. In rural Utah, you have to start thinking about it might be an hour drive or more each way just to get to where they might have a drop box or go to the county clerk's office. Mm-hmm. That is a long trip to make.
Sure is.
But we also have this interesting dynamic. The law says it must be postmarked on election day.
Yeah.
And I look back at the 2020 election and there were a whole bunch of people claiming that ballots that didn't arrive by election day shouldn't be counted. And now they're on the flip side saying we should count those that weren't even postmarked on election day.
It's funny how that works.
It's interesting. What I'm most interested in is what this will say about our election accuracy, because 214 votes, I'm interested in the recount, what we get.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, because normally within 214 would be like pretty good, but I'll bet they're pretty close.
Yeah, I bet they're close.
And I get the whole thing. If your ballot, you cast it and it wasn't counted, that sucks.
Yeah.
John, and then we'll get Shereen. The First Presidency of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints had a big announcement this week. They announced that Brigham Young University would now have a medical school. Boom. That's big. And I have a lot of
really
thoughts
big.
On that. But
I want to know your thoughts.
Well, I mean, if I just go on my quick one.
I just said, man, that's big. I didn't even expect that coming.
Yeah, so I think it's a masterstroke.
Okay.
I think.
How so?
By masterstroke, what I mean is that when you have an international faith mm-hmm. with this many members internationally and the needs, the humanitarian needs, the healthcare needs, the shortages of physicians, mm-hmm. the excellence of BYU, I think it's a masterstroke to do this. But you must execute correctly. Tells you don't disrupt too much that's going on either at Intermountain Healthcare or University of Utah Health. To the University of Utah's credit, to President Taylor Randall's credit, he's pledged absolute collaboration and sees a lot of ways to advance, healthier, better lives through this.
Yeah. So I think certainly one of the problems that we have in our system is doctors. We don't have enough healthcare professionals across the board, right? Though I think we have a lot of dentists in Utah, but otherwise, right? Like in general, it is, we do not have enough folks.
Shereen's so well-informed. She gets these stats right. I just want to tell you.
She's absolutely correct. On our per capita dentists, we're like at the top of the nation in terms of the most
dentists.
Which
I can't understand because I would hate staring into people's mouths all day.
Okay, but the point of the story is that
I grew up in Portland and there was a dental school right there and lots of Utahns came to dental school
there. So we have an opportunity to increase the capacity that we have to provide care. That's critically important. I think that's wonderful. I do feel like I'm curious to see how the relationships kind of play out. My understanding is there is communication with Intermountain Health about a collaboration on this. I mm-hmm. think that could be excellent. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is really exciting. I don't know, John.
So I think it's great. BYU is not going to create its own hospital. It's going to collaborate with IHC is my understanding. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be really interested, if you will, in how many Utahns or how many Americans are going to be engaged in this school versus how many from around the world are going to be coming here, getting trained and then going back to their countries and communities.
Yeah.
I seem to be giving a lot of prompts to our listeners today, but go to LDS.org, go to the bottom, look at Meeting House Locator, touch it, and then expand out and see the international presence of the LDS faith.
Mm, yeah.
It's like measles all over the world, meaning red dots.
Do you want to describe it that way?
I just mean red dots.
But
the idea is that the international good that can come from this is awesome. And I also want to say the University of Utah has a new building under construction to expand its medical class, and then also partnerships in St. George to do clinical work with Intermountain Health for our medical school there.
So I'll just say my touch point into this is the Peace Corps. And though different, there are some similarities, 2 years of service and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about one of the primary goals of the Peace Corps, it is that this cultural exchange does build a more peaceful world. And I think that's true. So if we are educating folks who are going back and making their communities healthier and stronger, that is person-to-person, on-the-ground diplomacy. And that can shift the peacefulness of the world that we live in, and I think that's great.
Awesome. Well, we have to wrap it up.
President Nelson, I mean, he's a medical doctor, and so... You
know. That'll be the name of this medical school.
Probably.
Hey, so glad to have you. Exciting discussion today. John Dougal, Natalie Gochner, and Shireen Gorbani. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Have fun with the Olympics.